The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. Couple minutes before 8, KMED, KMED HD1, Eagle Point, Medford, KBXG, Grants Pass. I appreciate you listening here. We're going to talk about some good news in the education when it comes to people looking for a classical education. We'll have some details on that coming up here. It's nice. It's great to be able to bring you some good news. We also have some good news, but it's also, it's about negative happenings, what ended up happening here. And it is going back to that order of love thing that started the show off this morning about why nations must prioritize their own. And we look at some criminal stories that indicated that in some ways we haven't necessarily prioritized our own. And this had to do with a couple of District of Oregon federal court cases that got decided. Now, this came from the district court here. Two San Antonio, Texas men sentenced to federal prison, another San Antonio man pleading guilty the other day for conspiring to travel from Texas to Southern Oregon to commit armed robbery disguised as DEA agents. Yeah, we got 23-year-old Nevin Cuevas Morales, sentenced to 135 months in federal prison, 5 years probation. Michael Ray Acuna, who is 23, sentenced to 64 months in prison. Some of restitution they each must pay to the victims will be determined at a later date. We have Juan Conchas, a 23-year-old, pled guilty to conspiring to interfere with commerce by robbery, also possessing marijuana, intent to distribute. He's facing a maximum sentence of 40 years in federal prison, $5 million fine, 4 years of supervised release. And this was from a March 2022 event, rather, when Josephine County Sheriffs ended up going to a rural address, armed robbery at, remember, at the pot grow place or the lab? I think it was the lab. What was it? But anyway, the victims reported that armed individuals dressed in what appeared to be DEA uniforms, and the feds did not appreciate that. There was another federal court case that I thought was interesting, too, that got decided. Now, this was in up in Portland. The owner and operator of La Popular, that is a money service business, kind of like a Western Union, had locations all over Oregon and Washington, arraigned in federal court yesterday. She was charged with laundering drug money, and a lot of drug money. This is the, I don't know if this person is an illegal alien, but it does make, it does make you wonder. Maybe he has a green card. Maybe this is someone brought in during Biden. I don't know. But 39-year-old Brenda Lily Barrera Orantes, a Guatemalan national living in Beaverton, charged by criminal complaint with money laundering. And apparently what she is accused of doing, this is a big deal. Between 2021 and 2024, Barrera is alleged to have accepted cash from drug proceeds and wired the money through her La Popular stores in Oregon and Washington. In exchange, she got a 10% cut of the take. And the financial records are now indicating that just Barrera Orantes transferred more than $89 million in drug money proceeds in her La Popular store, including $18.5 million to cartels in Mexico and Honduras. So, yeah, we're supposedly going to take money. They would get a lot of people who would pretend, oh, I am so poor, I'm going to send money back to my family at home. You know, one of those kind of situations. And it was really money laundering for the drug cartels. And so, now, she's not convicted at this point, but there does seem to be an awful lot of marijuana and fentanyl smoke and methamphetamine smoke that is rising up around this person. So, I don't think we're going to miss her, but a Guatemalan national doing the work that apparently Americans won't do anymore, I guess. But she's off the streets, at least, and in big trouble. A couple minutes after 8.
We're here with Susan, a Clouser Drilling customer. Susan, what was the...
But overall, dry forecast continues. 73 Saturday, Easter Sunday, high of 68.
Kim Komando Digital Minute is coming up here in just a moment. And boy, the gold markets, even though the markets, the greater financial markets are closed, it is just continuing just to power ever higher. Overnight, gold hit its all-time high in dollar value, in dollar terms here yesterday, $3,358. Now, it's given back a little bit. Yeah, we're just kind of bouncing between $3,300 and $3,358 right now, but $3,326 is where it is at the moment. And the commodity, the bull, continues to be running. A lot of times people are thinking this has to do with lack of trust in the system. This is why central banks are buying it. Big money appear to be buying it. And I don't know, could gold possibly be returning to its age-old purpose of being a real form of money? I don't know. But if you are looking to either stack some more because you're thinking maybe you don't have enough, or I've got some scrap and I'd like to, hey, at $3,328, I'm cleaning up, buddy. Well, talk to the folks at J. Austin & Company, gold and silver buyers in Ashland, 1632 Ashland Street, 6th and G in downtown Grants Pass. These are the recognized experts. They know this stuff. Good people, big supporters of talk radio. I highly recommend them and have always had a great experience. And I know you will too. And if you're looking to either buy or sell, you know, the thing is that, you know, they're just pure capitalism, honest, willing buyer, honest, willing sellers, you know, all that kind of stuff. And they recommend that you actually, if you are going to purchase some more, you keep it under your own control and not putting it in the self-directed 401k like so many gold places are saying, because the whole idea is to, if you're purchasing it because of a just-in-case and for stability, and if you're wanting to do that, why would you tell the government where it is? I don't know. You just have to think there have been... You can talk to Mark and Andrea and everybody about that. They'll tell you more. JAustinBrokers.com. You can also find out more about buying and selling on FortuneReserve.com. That's FortuneReserve.com. Jay Austin, the recognized experts.
This hour of the Bill Myers Show is sponsored by Fontana Roofing. For roofing, gutters, and sheet metal services, visit FontanaRoofingServices.com.
14 after 8. Yeah, how much it just gives me joy to actually talk to someone running a local school that says, hey, we got some good things. We got a nice new place we're going to be going into, going to be able to grow, educate more kids in a better fashion rather than number 45. Well, depending on who you talk to, what, number 45 worst public schools in the entire country. By the way, I would remind teachers, if you're a teacher in the public school system, remember, you are a member of one of the most powerful unionized workforces in the entire country. And if you would like to see reform in your local public school, get your union to care about it, because I think then the state of Oregon would care. But I digress, all right? Joining me here in the studio right now is Ben McReynolds, and he's from Knox Academy. KnoxMedford.com is the website for that. Tell us a little bit about what you do at Knox, if you don't mind, Ben.
No, I don't mind at all. Thank you for the opportunity to talk. Mentioning the teachers in the public schools reminded me of a story yesterday. We have one teacher who's taught in the public school, teaching for Knox now. And during the afternoon recess, there were a couple of students out there practicing Come Christians Join to Sing, because they want to sing it for the talent show.
Right.
We do every year. We do a grandparents' day where the grandparents come and they get to see some of the talents that the students put on. They do magic shows and riddles and jokes and handstands and all kinds of different things for their grandparents. It's a great time. And a little trio of second and third graders decided they were going to sing Come Christians Join to Sing together. And so they were out there on the lawn singing during recess, practicing this song. And the teacher, as she was rounding up her students to go back in, was reflecting on how different an experience it is teaching at Knox than it was teaching in the public school, where you are just drowning in behavior problems and cultural issues. And here you're dealing with a much different, more beautiful atmosphere, working with children, bringing them up in the faith, bringing them up in a community and a culture that is centered around classical Christian education. It's been a wonderful experience.
You know, Ben, I realized that we really had a sick culture in the public education sphere. And I've been a big fan at this point where, yes, you continue to fight to reform that system. But to save your kids, if you can, you have to get them out now. Get them out at this time. Because there just has been so much rot and so much of decay. So much decay that has gone into that system. And I'm going to go back 1997, 1998, I think is when this was. So this is good, 26, 27 years ago. And I ended up going to the Briscoe School at that point, which was open. in Ashland because they were having a holiday concert, or maybe they were calling it a winter concert. I forget. That's, of course, another little hint, you know, when you see this. And I remember the music teacher, and it was a really good concert. This is all fine. But I remember one of the teachers, and I forget who she was, stood up and said, "We're going to be playing some music now, some Christmas music, which is of sacred nature. And I just wanted to warn people that it's a," and I remember this, the words were, "I want to warn people that this is religious music that we're about to play here, but it is some of the most beautiful music ever composed." This is how she felt like she had to issue a warning to the audience that there was some sacred Christmas music about to be performed by these young children. And that's when I knew. And I mean, I turned to my spouse. I got, this is a problem.
Yeah.
And
yeah, it definitely draws attention to the fact that a proper theology or a proper pursuit of God or understanding of the transcendent is linked very much to beauty. And so you make beautiful things. Your soul is inspired to participate in beautiful things when you actually think the world is beautiful. When you when you consider that you're a creator made it. I was reading recently in a book called Beauty for Truth's Sake. I was reflecting on Simone Weil's comment that if it wasn't for all the monks and all the people in the medieval years pressing the order of the universe for an understanding of the God who created it, we wouldn't have geometry and math and all these things, because the pursuit of math back then was all about understanding the God who created order. And so, all of this, technical, scientific math, all of these pursuits, natural philosophy, what science used to be, and math, part of the quadrivium, all of these things were about studying the creator who made this universe. And that's how it started. Intense, wonderful discoveries that took place because people were so focused on a beautiful God and fixated on understanding him better. It wasn't for its utilitarian purposes. That's the biggest the biggest difference today from today, is that now it's all about how to get a job, how to get a scholarship, how can it help us be more efficient, produce more volume.
A purely transactional relationship in the educational world.
Yeah, we're all just...
Now, at Knox Academy, it is a classical education. Mm-hmm. And when people hear that, and by the way, the great news that we wanted to share about this, and like I said, it's always wonderful to be able to say, you've had some issues with trying to find a more permanent home. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, we've been a bit transient. I think most schools, as they start up, similar to ours, are that way.
But 5-year lease, and you signed it with Cornerstone Christian Church. Mm-hmm. It's that 1908 school building, huh?
Yeah, old Lincoln Elementary building. It's
cool.
An exciting move for us. The building is still ready to be a school. It's neat to see how well built and beautiful buildings were back then, and it's lasting and needs some TLC for sure. So we've got a project ahead of us, but we're excited. The high ceilings, the woodwork inside, big classrooms. It's just a really neat space for our school, and it's going to fit us well.
When do you move in?
We start school next year in the building. So
very
good. End of August.
Does this mean that you can expand your offerings here to the public looking for a different educational option?
Yeah, we will be way more accessible, way more available to the broader Jackson County area, and we're excited about that.
Okay.
Yes.
What does the classical education offer that, let's say, conventional education does not right now?
I recently came across four pillars that I think are really good talking points in describing classical Christian education. The first one is that it's Christ-centered, which is kind of part of that ordering your loves. A big part of ordering our loves.
Yeah, we were talking about this morning.
I
mentioned this, the ordering of love.
Yeah, right? so we set that piece in a focus on the transcendent, a focus on created order and a savior. Classical Christian education is really just another term for education. You know, what was education prior to modernity, and so it developed in a Christian world. And so when we're calling it classical Christian education, it's really all, so it's Christ-centered. It's rooted in the cultivation of wisdom and virtue. It's an apprenticeship into the liberal arts, and it's focused on the timeless and the traditional. So that's what we are as a school.
So you are not into the fads?
No, it's not. It's not trendy at all. There are a lot of trends within classical Christian ed that people are implementing, but the pursuit is to be very true to timeless things, books, methods, songs that have stood the test of time.
Universal truth.
Yeah.
Okay. Does a classical education prepare you for higher education in some ways when the time comes? Because I would wonder if some people would say, well, no, if you're talking about this kind of stuff, you're not into all of the woke agenda when you're coming into the public university then. What happens then?
Yeah, it prepares you for a good life. I mean, that's ultimately the goal of an education as it was understood. It prepares you to live a good life with healthy habits intact, healthy loves intact. And yes, if college is your goal and is your destination, then you'd be well prepared.
Do they look at you, do these universities look at you differently than they would a conventional public school when it comes to as far as credits, transferability, things like that? How's that work?
Yeah, colleges are pretty good right now about checking test scores, volunteer activities. I remember back when I went to college, there were homeschool graduates who came to college without any credits but the college was very welcoming just based on SAT scores and just based on personality and what that student would bring to the school. Now we are, as a school, just now in the process of getting our accreditation status with the Association of Classical Christian Schools. So in about a year, we'll be undergoing that process, and our credits will be fully transferable anyway. But yeah, right now we are not accredited. So we do have two graduates who are currently at Grand Canyon University. They didn't have a problem getting in.
Is the accreditation process a way that Caesar in some way keeps a boot on the neck of real education as contrasted with the agenda-based education?
Yes. Public. I mean, it's an accountability structure that's important. I mean, we all need accountability. And there are accreditation firms are actually private. So it's not a public system. I don't know that for sure in the public school system, but I know there are a lot of private accreditation firms that schools go through. And so, yeah, it's just a structure that helps make sure all your paperwork is in order, that you're communicating well with your parents and making sure that you are staying true to your mission. And then the accreditation that we're pursuing is specific to classical Christian schools.
Ben McReynolds from Knox Academy, knoxmedford.com. And they are now moving over to the Cornerstone Christian Church. How many people how many students will you be able to take in something like that now in that new design?
Oh, goodness. I think we would probably get into 120 to 150 right in there comfortably.
Yeah. Whoa. Okay. That's significantly more, I think, than you've had in the past. Would that be fair?
Yep. We're about half that right now. We're a little over 60.
Okay. All right. So this is kind of a different, a more traditional education, a Christ-centered education, and definitely, I think, providing... I mean, how appropriate to talk about it on Good Friday then and going into, Easter weekend. That's why I thought, come in today. Don't come in Monday. All right?
Yeah.
That's what you were talking about doing here. And is it, I want to ask a philosophical question. I know that many conservatives, many on the Republican Party side of the world are saying, we want school choice and we want vouchers. And what do you think about that? Because I feel, and maybe I'm absolutely wrong to think this, but I can't help but think that the moment that government money through a voucher system, so in other words, the tax money will stay with the child, that the moment that tax money could then be used on Knox Academy or any other private school here in Southern Oregon, Grace Christian, whatever the case might be, that's the beginning of the end. Am I wrong to think that way, or do you think there may be a sea change in attitudes about the state's relationship to education?
Well, I know that we have some very strong advocates for school choice, even at the school and at my school, and I also am very aware that families are unable to send their kids simply by virtue of the fact that it's too expensive.
And many times they're having to pay twice.
And
you're paying high taxes to support the public school system that you may not wish to use because it's not good for your child.
Yep.
But then on the other hand, I'm thinking if that money gets the same people that are running that public system would then have some say, I would imagine, under the guise of accountability, which you are even just talking about. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't really know. It's certainly something that makes us nervous. The ACCS, the association that we're members of, has made very firm what their position is regarding that and how strings cannot be attached if a school is receiving money from the state. So those standards are already set within the organization.
Okay.
And I know that the school choice legislation that they were trying to get signatures for last year was very ideal in what they were pursuing. Trying to make sure that money was not going to have strings attached to it. Sounds wonderful. I mean, I think that it would help families a lot. Families are already receiving money.
We have school choice already in the state of Oregon, but essentially you have school choice as long as you can find alternatives and are willing to pay for again.
And there are families who just do that, who structure their lives around making sure their kids are at the school they want to be at, and it might mean eating a lot of ramen. I mean, they just it just really in many ways depends on that ordered affection. Doesn't mean private school is right for everybody, but it is a sacrifice, is the point. And I don't want to really see that lost. I think that that's an important factor in bringing families who really want and love what it is that a school is doing. Rather than say, for instance, now it's free. Sometimes that means you're not getting the right families too. So it's
tough. That's right.
It's tough to know. You want families to really recognize the value of it and are willing to pay it. That helps.
All right. People pay for it because it's worth it.
it is worth it.
Okay. Where can people find out more about this? And when are you accepting enrollment right now?
We are enrolling. Our new location for next year is at 608 North Bartlett, right in the middle of town, very accessible. And I would encourage people to come visit our car wash that we're doing this Saturday from 10 to 1 if you need your car washed tomorrow. That would be a good time to see the location and meet some people from the school. Our upper school is raising money to go to a spring formal up in Roseburg. We're joining a sister school up there, a sister classical school. So that'll be fun. Go to our website, knoxmedford.com. There's information there. We've got open houses available twice a month at our new location. I'm also very willing to sit down with people at our current location, let them see classrooms in action and talk to them about the school and about the program. We've got a Facebook page. That's another place you can check us out.
All right. Ben McReynolds, thanks so much. Great to have you on.
Thank you.
Good to hear the positive news on this and being able to get a few more kids and save a few more, okay?
Yep.
Get a few people
out
of
it. It is a rescue operation, for sure.
Exactly. An educational rescue operation. KnoxMedford.com, 830 KMED, 99.3 KBXG. Hi, this is Bill Meyer, and I'm with
Steve. Call Bill now, 541-770-5633. That's 770-KMED.
770-5633, like the man said here. Oregonian this morning, state senators from both parties rallied Thursday to back an $800 million jock tax to help pay for a prospective stadium for Major League Baseball on Portland's South Waterfront. State Senator Daniel Bonham, Republican from the Dalles, says, "This is a moment for us to come together and unite around an idea." That's right, Daniel. Reach across the aisle. Make sure that the Democrats get their taxpayer finance ball field. But anyway, he's the Senate Republican leader. He says baseball could help Portland rebound from a series of problems that has slowed its recovery from the pandemic. Once again, this is a Republican reaching across the aisle saying, "This is a good idea." How does that take care of the dirtbaggy lack of enforcement of not only drug rules, but homeless rules and various other things, and the attack on small businesses, the lack of law enforcement? How does somehow putting a ball field, a ball stadium into Portland at taxpayer expense, how does that take care of this, Daniel Bonham? I didn't know. It'll be a showcase of what is beautiful, central, core to our constituents of Portland, Bonham said. It now moves on to Oregon House, to the Oregon House, rather, and Governor Tina Kotek has already signaled her support. The bill doesn't create a new tax for athletes. It does authorize, though, an $800 million 30-year bond and designates income tax revenue from Major League ballplayers and team staff to pay off the debt. Okay, so there we go. Oregon will only authorize the bond if baseball awards a team to Portland. Now, of course, we're having the same kind of waxing poetic about baseball discussed here in Southern Oregon with the Eugene Emeralds. Eugene Emeralds were rejected by taxpayers up there who didn't want to spend $100 million to build them a brand new ball season, or ball stadium, rather. And so they came and they talked to the Medford City Council a couple of weeks ago, or last week, I think. Was it last week, I think? Last Wednesday at a study session? Yeah. And so they did that last week. I talked with Councillor Nick Card yesterday afternoon and said, hey, Nick, why don't you come on and let's take the temperature. Let's talk about that. We're going to flesh this out a little bit more on Monday morning. Now, he knows that I am absolutely distrustful of sports team socialism. I know there are people here in Southern Oregon very upset with me because I'm against progress, apparently. And I am not against progress, but what I am against are private businesses, sports teams looking to hang very expensive projects around the necks of the beleaguered taxpayers who may support baseball or may not support baseball. And the way I tend to look at government is that government is there to pay for the stuff that we have to have, not the stuff that we would like to have. It's not there to provide our entertainment. It's not there to provide our sports teams a place to play. I just don't look at it that way. I look at it as education, public safety, things like that, making sure that dirt bagginess is kept to a minimum and the people are protected. But I know that I'm against progress. And somehow, the magic money of a sports team that couldn't make it in Eugene will magically restore Southern Oregon. Yeah, the city council knows that I would need to see some numbers, and given the fact that even the baseball team itself admits, it's going to be 23 years that we estimate before that the money coming in will be greater than the expenses, so it's going to be losing money for 23 years. But this is going to be the capstone of beauty. I don't know. I should not be so cynical about this, but Nick Carr, good guy. He's going to join me Monday morning, and we'll talk about it around 7:30, and he's going to tell us what the council's thinking. And what he's thinking, I guess he's not going to speak for the entire council, but you know how that goes. We're going to kind of get the lay of the land, as it were. Good morning. Hi, who's this? Welcome.
Hey, Bill, it's Lucretia.
Oh, it's Lucretia. Lucretia, hold on. Hold on. I got to find your theme. Where's your theme? Gosh, I'm losing your theme. Oh, there it is. Okay. Can't have Lucretia without a theme. There we go. What's on your mind?
So, Bill, you don't want to feed the bread and circuses as Rome burns? I mean, it's going down. We've got to have some entertainment.
Yeah, well, I guess we have to have some place like a ball stadium to throw the Christians and or conservatives that refuse to take the next World Health Association or organization agenda shot or something like that. You know, you never know. You need some place to throw them. So that way.
Listen, I have two comments.
Okay.
One, you're going after the small potatoes with $89 million is all she was laundering. Catherine Austin Fitz talked about a $500 million to $1 trillion being laundered through the stock market back when Janet Reno was in power in June of 2000.
Yeah.
They said it's legal to launder this money. It was the amount of money that these companies that were trading with NASDAQ, if they traded with NASDAQ, they could launder this money. It was General Electric, Philip Morris, Hewlett Packard, Ford, Sony, General Motors, Whirlpool, bringing in the drugs to feed our children. Okay? And so.
How are they bringing in the drugs to feed the children, though? That's an interesting claim. Go ahead.
Well, she said $500 million to $1 trillion a year they were laundering these companies. It wasn't that they were laundering. It was the Michael Rupert who showed how it's done and how they're doing it.
Okay. Oh, Michael Rupert. Yeah, he's the guy that wrote Cross the Rubicon book back in during 9/11 time, yeah. Right?
Now, one other comment, please. yesterday you talked about Benjamin Franklin.
Yes.
And his little thing he likes to do, which was swim. Okay.
And by the way, did he like to swim naked? I seem to recall that part. Was that true?
No doubt. Don't forget, he had his own tunnel named after him. Some of these tunnels were 300 feet deep, and they were deists. And supposedly Washington, Jefferson, Franklin, Madison, Monroe are all deists. And it's a philosophical belief in human reason as a reliable means of solving social and political problems, not through Jesus Christ. They didn't believe in him. Okay?
Uh-huh, right.
But the thing is,
It's like kind of a universal God is the way they looked at things through deism.
Right. Mm-hmm. What both the Jesuits as well as the Puritans were doing, they were going into areas and they'd get rid of the population, the Indian and whoever was living there by having plagues. Ergot comes is a mold toxin, but that's how they create LSD. People don't even know that.
Now, are you trying to tell me though that the Puritans knew that they could spread disease, that they knew that, even though there was no germ theory at that point?
Yeah, and if you knew what they were putting in this vat, everything from poisonous toads to the snake venom to the tongue of a little puppy to a owl's wing, I mean, it was just a disgusting and sewer and all this, and then they'd lance you, and then they put this on you, and it was just causing all these people to die of incredible infections because they would cut your arm up and then stuff it in there.
Wow. Now, see, this is far afield from a naked Benjamin Franklin swimming in a 300-foot tunnel. Oh, no, I'm sorry. It's a different tunnel. Okay.
Now, when the first site, when I looked at, I was trying to look for this research, I go to Washington Blade, and it turns out Benjamin Franklin bought over a guy that was because it was prosecuted if you were gay in the past in England. He was in jail. He brought him over to help us win the war, okay, against England and get
the. Yeah, who was the gay guy he brought over? You're right. It wasn't very popular in those days.
I'll send you the link, but
okay. All right, you do that. All right. So the thing is, though, you've kind of taken me to a lot of different things. So I got to go.
What the riot bill?
What
this site that I went to? It was like, hey, will you give to the LGBTQ? Because Benjamin Franklin was a statesman and he was a friend of gays.
Okay, great marketing. Thanks, Lucretia. All right. Oh my goodness. It's Find Your Phone Friday. Hopefully you found yours. Hi, good morning. Who's this?
This is Minor Dave.
Oh, Garrett, great. It's two in a row. How you going there, Dave?
I'm doing okay. I want to wish everybody a good Easter and the resurrection, and to our Jewish friends to have a good Passover and a good Seder dinner. So that said, Donald Trump several months ago signed an executive order directing the Secretary of Interior, the EPA, and the Department of Energy to coordinate the CFRs, which the Department Secretary of Interior just wrote a letter of memorandum.
Yeah, what are they trying to accomplish with it? Just stick with that, okay?
They're going to rewrite this Code of Federal Regulations to comply with the 1872 Mining Act.
It's very interesting if this ends up happening, and you know why they have to do it.
Well, it's because of pressure, and they need those rules changed so that a guy like me could go out, or a guy like you.
Oh, I don't think they give a damn about a guy like you or a guy like me mining, okay? You know what they do give a damn about right now here, Miner Dave?
What?
The fact that China has embargoed its rare earth shipments here.
Right? So that's correct.
Yeah. So they better get it and get some rare earths and get some rare earths pronto. All right. Appreciate the call. We go to the next line. Hi, good morning. Who's this? Hello. Hello. Going once. Hello. Going twice. I have a feeling someone butt dialed me. Hi, good morning. Who's this? Welcome.
Hi, this is James.
James, go ahead.
I just want to say that, the pride thing and trance where they mutilate our children, and I would just say that Satan's out there trying to destroy our joy, because as a grandfather and a great grandfather, if you're sitting in a restaurant or at the grocery store and little kids come up behind you and put their hands around you, give you a big hug because they're your grandchildren, mm-hmm, or great grandchildren, the devil's trying to steal our joy by trying to
try to destroy the next generation that could actually have those grandchildren.
All that, trying to take away our joy.
Yeah, agreed. Appreciate the call there. Thanks, James. 844.
America.
Serving the Rogue Valley for over 50 years. Visit us at siskiyoupump.com.
You're hearing the Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED.
Michael's on the road. Michael, what's on your mind on Find a Phone Friday? Let's hear it.
Yeah, good Friday.
Good Friday. Indeed. Thank you.
I was talking to my sister a while back, and she's saying that we got on the subject of bottled water. She goes, oh, I only use the baby water from, you know, because I know they, you know, it's definitely better than regular. And I go, you know the difference, right? She goes, no. And I go, they add extra fluoride for the toothless babies.
Oh, do they add fluoride to the baby water? I didn't know that.
Well, I don't know if they do it anymore because what people finally caught on. My sister was like blown away. She thought I was crazy until she read it and called me back.
Boy, that's really interesting. So the babies that if you talk to dentists, the dentists are still very much in favor of fluoridation of water, but the people have been less agreeable to that agenda, I think.
Well, phase two, we were talking about, you know, different other things, and I said, why are they still putting aluminum in the bread for leavening agent? And all the baking powder is aluminum. You got to really watch out not to get the aluminum. And I'm like, probably more expensive. I don't know why they're doing that, but.
It must have been because it was less expensive. I know that Linda likes to bake bread now and then and bake some other things. And so there will be recipes which call for baking powder. And we ended up finding some baking powder. In fact, it even advertises itself. You'll see it on the the label of the can. A non-aluminum formula. And I would think, yeah, that's pretty much okay. I know aluminum is very common in the environment. It's one of the most common minerals or compounds or metal in our soils, even around here, volcanic soils. But not really good to eat a whole lot of that. If you can get away from it, that's probably a better thing, wouldn't you think?
It's accumulative, so that's definitely a good idea.
Yeah, and maybe aluminum toxicity is why we have Congress right now. You don't know.
It's not a good thing.
Thank you, Michael. Appreciate hearing from you. 770-5633-770-KMED. All right, and I'm still hoping that we can get some more information on what happened to Ashley. I talked about this story a little bit earlier this morning, a couple hours ago, when we were going over some of the news here. Because yesterday, the Jackson County grand jury indicted James David Lee Hergett. Now, I think the more names you have in your indictment, the worse it's for you, right? That's right, because all criminals have at least three names. You have four? Is that me? I'm just kidding. But anyway, 34-year-old guy, Ashland, and they're nailing him for first-degree kidnapping, second-degree kidnapping, firearm coercion, unlawful use of a weapon, menacing domestic violence, attempted assault, second-degree harassment, sex abuse, third degree, sex abuse, one degree. And so this all, this actually didn't start April 12th, but April 12th was the latest crime spree that he's accused of doing, that he vandalized some downtown area property in Ashland. He fled from that, confronted and beat up, assaulted several people. Officers arrive. He takes off from that. Officers attempted to contact Hergett. He fled again on foot. While doing so, he went into another home, another assault against the occupant of that home. And when officers contacted Hergett again, he beat up a couple of police officers or assaulted them before being subdued with a taser. Now, you see, that's just the end of it. The origin of this. This is the part that we're going to have to find out more, but they put this at the end of the release. And you know how they always talk about burying the lead? I know they spell it normally L-E-D-E, but I'm thinking burying the main point of the news release is this part of it. A previous incident was reported to the Ashland Police Department April 8th, in which Hergett is alleged to have held a man captive for 48 hours. 48 hours, 2 days he held him captive, assaulting him and menacing him with a firearm. Officers were unable to act on this complaint immediately due to concerns that forcing contact with Hergett could unnecessarily endanger the neighborhood community given the known presence of multiple firearms. So the sex abuse charges stem from the incident back on April 8th. So 4 days before he was finally taken down, they were able to tase him to death. And I'm looking at this situation. I have relatives who work in the Ashland Police Department, and I don't know if they could tell me what they think, what happened. I need to, but still, this idea that he was kind of roaming the streets free for 4 days until he beat up other people and assaulted them, but we couldn't do anything April 8th because, well, it would have been dangerous for the community, or could have been dangerous for the community. I do kind of miss the days in which people would show up with a baton or a billy club and apply it to the forehead of someone who was deeply in need of it, right? I miss a little bit of that. You know, is this what the new style of policing is? Well, you know, you might have a firearm, so we don't want to do anything. Yeah, I get that, but something doesn't feel right. Something does not feel right about this story. Maybe it was in a situation where they couldn't do anything involving a firearm. They're thinking there might be some danger, but could you surround the house? Could you just surround the house for a little while? Smoke them out, that sort of thing? Come out with your hands up? Is that something which we don't do any longer when someone who has already demonstrated their alleged dirtbaggy behavior? I'm just raising it to you. I hope we can find out more about it. But finally, he's in Jackson County Jail on a total of $750,000 bail. Hopefully that senator from Maryland's not going to be coming out here and posting the bond for him and say, I need to see this man because he's one of my people. Yeah, I'm only half kidding, but this is the Bill Maher Show.
CCB number 250730.
Hi, I'm Randy with Diner 62, and I'm on KMED.
Some more emails of the day, sponsored by Dr. Steve Nelson, Central Point Family, Family Dentistry, centralpointfamilydentistry.com. Elaine writes me about the U-turn for Christ people. Says, Bill, the U-turn for Christ in our town in California had a retail store, accepted donations, and the money collected helped support them. Terrific organization. They helped many young men stop using drugs and alcohol and begin living useful lives. Thank you for the tip on that, Elaine. All right. We have Patrick writing about sports team progress. Bill, the idea that a public tax-supported stadium project is progress just doesn't wash. If the stadium is taxpayer-supported, then shouldn't the ticket price be zero? Just a double taxation scheme. So instead of calling this progress, it should be called fraudress. Dave kicks in here. Bill, look to NASCAR on paying their own way. $400 million track renovation in 2016 was paid by the owners with a private loan package. And he links to an ESPN story. Private funding and donations should be on baseball owners. The baseball field will still have to hire local workers. Okay, very good. Well, we're going to be talking more about this because I am, I don't want to be against progress, but I sure want to be for taxpayers not getting hosed and screwed. Okay, by private organizations, by private groups and people with agendas. So anyway, to that matter, 7:30 on Monday morning, Nick Card, good city councilor, has been kind enough to say, yep, he'll come in. We'll talk about it. He'll talk about, you know, what was presented and any thoughts. And maybe we'll take some calls, too. We'll kick that all around Monday. See ya.
Southern Oregon's place to talk. KMED and KMED.